Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover luxurious duvet sets today. Visit harrycurry.com for stylish comfort this spring. Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover luxurious duvet sets today. Visit harrycurry.com for stylish comfort this spring.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You're very welcome to Liveline. Colm O'Mungoyne here. If you're calling from abroad, 08457 853333. You can WhatsApp us 484-8888. That's 087-484-8888. Remember that one. We might need your voice notes on the next item that's coming up. 51551 for your text. joe@rte.ie. And as you heard, 0818715815 for your calls. Now, Pierce Brosnan is starring as Conrad Harrigan, the main mobster in a new Paramount Plus series, and he's the patriarch of a crime family. And he recently told an interviewer that Conrad Harrigan, the Irish mobster, has a Kerry accent. Now, is this a Kerry accent? Here's Pierce Brosnan talking to Helen Mirren, his co-star in Mobland.
Shut the door. Where is he now? Yeah, hang about. Maeve, Harry's got Richie Stevens in the crosshairs. Stick or twist?
Stick to him, or is that twist?
Of course twist is do. Why? Just out of interest, why?
It's obvious. Wrong place, wrong time.
Oh, how's that?
Now, Pierce Brosnan there starring as Conrad Harrigan and Helen Mirren starring as Maeve Harrigan, his wife and matriarch of the family. So there's no shortage of Irish credentials in the show. It's written by Belfast man Ronan Bennett. There's Paddy Considine in there as well. There's Emmett Scanlon as actors. So it's an Irish mobster based in London. No spoilers on the programme. But there has been a lot of online sledging of Pierce Brosnan's Kerry accents, the Irishness of the accent generally, but specifically the focus on the Kerry aspect of it. Now, he did explain that he went for a Kerry accent only 15 minutes before actually going in and shooting it. He got a couple of pages, three pages of script, I think, from Guy Ritchie, but he decided that Kerry was the most Irish accent he could go for when encouraged by Guy Ritchie to go more Irish than his accent already is. Paul Lally, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Colm. How are you?
Good. What do you make of the accent?
Okay, well, full disclosure. First, I haven't seen the series yet. It's queued up in my to-do list. I'm very excited about it, actually. And you know what? I'm from Limerick originally, so as far as I'm concerned, that's perfectly authentic. I really don't know. No, I'm joking, obviously. I mean, look, if the people of Kerry find that an affront to their culture, I can completely understand that. But if I was looking to that, you know, in terms of story, you know, performance and stuff like that, that's more or less what I'd be looking for. You know, in the past, we've seen a number of different actors take on a number of different roles where they've had questionable accents. Some have really gotten in the way of the performance. I'm looking at you, Kevin Costner, as Robin Hood. But then other times you've had people like, I mean, another Bond, Sean Connery, has played a Russian submarine captain, Ramius.
Lithuanian. I have to step in there. He was in the Soviet Navy.
Corrected. He was corrected.
His nickname was the Schoolmaster of Vilnius. So he was Lithuanian.
He was a
Soviet sea captain. Go on, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you burst my credentials right out of the water. That's very, very good. And also, he was an Egyptian, an immortal Egyptian in Highlander as well. So, look, it's really kind of about whether you're able to buy into the performance or not. And personally, I feel at this point in his career, I think Brosnan has a lot of gravitas, has a lot of experience behind him that might lend that to this type of role. So right. I'm stoked for it. I'm excited. I'm hoping the accent won't get in the way of it, but that remains to be seen.
Okay, and as you mentioned Sean Connery there, I mean, he did play two Irish roles, one in Darby O'Gill and the second in The Untouchables. And
yes, he
just used his Scottish accent, presumably going on the basis that most Americans wouldn't know the difference between Irish and Scottish.
I think when he was interviewed about it, he just said, I just can't do other accents. I just wouldn't know who I was. And people were like, okay. So I think Connery arrived with a take it or leave it kind of an attitude towards his performance, you know. Jimmy Malone in the Untouchables in 1987 was a striking example of that, of how it didn't particularly seem Irish, but in a generic Celtic, being in America for a few years kind of vibe he went with, and, you know, it won him an Oscar in the end. So
right.
I think if the performance is there.
You would be a Pierce Brosnan fan, though. I mean, seeing as you rattle through Sean Connery's back catalogue, what do Sean Connery and Pierce Brosnan have in common?
Is this a joke? Because I guess it's James Bond, really. That's about it. After that, I couldn't tell you.
Right. Yeah. And James Bond, do you want to spill your credentials on that one?
Sure. Well, I'm president of the James Bond Club Ireland, which is a group that was put together a few years ago just to have friends who wanted to get together and do screenings of old Bond films and, you know, have a bit of a laugh and meet other Bond fans across the world. And that's what we've been doing. And I was speaking to Joe a little while ago about Bond, and we had a 30-year anniversary screening of GoldenEye in Navan, in fact, this year as well. So
where do you rank Pierce in the Bonds?
Well, he wouldn't be my top Bond. I'm actually a Craig fan, but I do like, I like all the Bonds. I'm a Bond fan, what can I tell you? Like, it's like picking one of your favourite children. It's a bit difficult to do, you know?
So, you don't want to out yourself for where Pierce ranks on your Bonds.
I've already been outed.
So it's Craig top, is Pierce second?
Listen, on any given day, depending on my mood, they bounce up and down between each other. I'm not going, lest I cause a massive divide in the Bond community. I wouldn't dream of ranking any further than my number one there.
All right. Well, let's throw it out there. Let's hear that clip again of Pierce Brosnan and Helen Mirren in Mobland, and then we'll get to where the accent came from.
Shut the door. Where is he now? Yeah. Hang about. Maeve, Harry's got Richie Stevens in the crosshairs. Mm. Stick or twist?
Stick Doom, or is that twist?
Of course twist is Doom. Why? Just out of interest, why?
It's obvious. Wrong place, wrong time.
Oh, how's that?
There's a scene where somebody, a rival, is going to be sniped. Do you think it should have been twist?
Yeah.
Do you think it should have been stick or twist? Rather than
I don't know. You know,
twist.
We should probably get Michael Fassbender on here to discuss the finer points of the Kerry accent.
Well, he can do the finer points of a Belfast accent, because in Hunger and Kneecap, he manages a very good Belfast accent as well.
Yeah.
He is. Well, listen, here's where it came from, because Pierce Brosnan did a short interview with Dave Moore on Today FM, and he explained, Guy Ritchie, he turned up, he got the script for it. He had about 3 pages. He had to go in for the first day of shooting. He came up, he gave a read through it, but Guy Ritchie said, more Irish. And here's where Pierce Brosnan said his head went to when he was encouraged to do that.
Kerry has a, you know, a lovely sing-song lilt to it, and it has a bite to it, and it has a sense of humour to it. But it can be very hard and grab you by the throat. And in the hands of Conrad, it gave me the character. So it was literally 15 minutes before shooting that he became
more Irish.
And that's how that's how Conrad Harrigan was born, really.
Conrad Harrigan, the main gangster character. Now, Pierce Brosnan did concede earlier in that interview that over his time in California, his accent has probably dissipated. He did obviously spend quite a bit of time in the UK as a young man as well, after he left Ireland in his adolescence, I suppose it'd be safe to say. So, I mean, that's his normal accent as delivered to Dave Moore. Do you think that would have cut it as a mobster? Do you think it was reasonable for Guy Ritchie to ask him to Irish up further his already clearly Irish accent?
Yeah, I heard that interview, and you know, I think he was, fair play to him for being open enough to say that, you know, his Irish is somewhere between Malibu, Navan, London, a whole load of places. You know, it's watered down at this point. I mean, was it fair for you know, a professional director, a screenwriter, to say to a professional actor to change his accent with 15 minutes to go? I don't know. You know, I'd have struggled with it, but I'm not an actor, so I'm not really sure. What I think is, there are two types of performance that people tend to go for. It's the very sort of pinpoint look-alike, sound-alike, you know, particularly if they're doing a biopic, or there's the more interpretive one. And I think Pierce was really forced to go with a more interpretive one there, you know, at that point. Presumably he just leaned into that and said, look, I'm gonna bring a musicality to it. I again defer to anyone from Kerry to correct his description of a Kerry accent there, of what that really is. But as I said before, like, if you go back to the 80s when Brosnan was in a film called Taffin, where he was supposed to be kind of a tough guy back in town kind of thing, but he had this coiffed sort of new romantic hairstyle, I'm not sure I would have bought into him that much right then. But this time round, I think I'm definitely more open to him. As I said before, you know, he's got gravitas. You know, you can see him leading a family, making tough decisions like this, and paired up with the likes of Tom Hardy, I think it's a really interesting cast. And obviously, Guy Ritchie's credentials are pretty solid. So
right. Maybe a Kerry accent is hard to do because Jamie Dornan had to play another Kerry man, Pat Quinlan, the Irish Army officer who commanded the UN forces in the siege of Jadotville. So, you know,
amazing. Yeah,
it's a good movie.
Yeah,
but again,
people looked at
the accent and maybe raised an eyebrow over it. Do you think that's getting a bit nitpicky?
Well, again, it depends on the story and the performance. I mean, if you're taking like that particular film's a very serious storyline, very serious subject matter, people are going to take it seriously. They're going to want to see a certain earnestness in the performance and in the way that story is delivered. And that may even come down to the accent. So I wouldn't blame anyone for having a strong opinion on that one way or the other. But again, you know, it really comes down to whether you're willing to go with it in the end, whether you're willing to accept that performance, you know. Some of them worked, as I said. Would you accept Tom Cruise in Far and Away as an Irish accent? Maybe, maybe not. But it really comes down to the actor and the level of performance. So I can't say that it is, you know, every accent must be pinned down 100%. That's
right.
My opinion anyway.
Right.
But it's really a subjective thing.
And when it comes down to pounds, shillings and pence, to put it that way, I mean, the Irish market in the overall scheme of things, the cinema going audiences are what, maybe a couple of hundred thousand. If it annoys a couple of hundred thousand people when there's a potential audience of millions out there, in the overall scheme of things, is it foremost in the mind of producers how bang on that accent is?
It's a good question. I mean, I wouldn't care to speculate what's foremost in the mind of filmmakers, but I think once it's not laughable, I think they're going to go, yeah, and more people will forgive you than won't. And, you know, if you're looking at an international audience, they'll probably, especially if it's an American audience, they may not be so forensic in their analysis of what a Kerry accent is or isn't. And yeah, if you annoy a few people, exactly right. But I think they want to generally not insult their audience at the same time. You know, these are smart people, smart filmmakers. And generally, I think they have a certain deference that they pay to their audiences. So they want to be a level of authentic, but they're also asking you to go along with them while they try something that is, you know,
and look,
a risk.
And you say the word laughable. Maybe, you know, Guy Ritchie does kind of action, comedy, crime dramas. You know, maybe he wanted an accent that was so strong it had a comic element to it.
That was nice of him to alert Pierce Brosnan 15 minutes before starting then, wasn't it?
Yep.
He really dropped him in it at that point.
Well, or job done is another way of looking at it.
Job done. Yeah. I'm not sure. What are your thoughts? Are you open to this? Are you looking forward to seeing it? Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it. I have seen the promos of it and I have seen the commentary on it. But yeah. Anyway, Margaret, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, how are you?
Shtick or twist with that performance, to put it that way.
I think there's a little bit of twist in the tale, all right, yeah.
Yeah, go on. What's your analysis?
I don't know about the series, but I just did listen to see what I thought. And it's not a desperately bad Irish accent. I've actually heard Pierce Brosnan do worse Irish accent, but it's definitely not a Kerry accent.
Right. Are you Kerry
definitely
yourself?
Definitely not. Well, my mum was from Killarney, and I do go down and visit regularly. Now, I have to say that my cousins and younger do not actually have any kind of a Kerry accent any longer.
What?
But my own, they have a sort of a, in the same way as people would say, I don't have a Dublin accent, although I think I have a Dublin accent. They don't have as strong a Kerry accent as my mum would have had and her siblings would have had. And their own children would have had.
Right. It should be said, Pierce Brosnan's dad was from Kerry. Is it Thomas Brosnan was a carpenter from Kerry, so he
from Kerry. Well,
yeah.
he should be able to do a slightly better one. Now, I'm not good on accents, but then I'm not an actor. I don't think it matters, but I don't imagine it'll matter in the plot or in the story.
Right. You don't think that's Kerry anyway. If you're watching that, though, you're sitting down, if you were sitting down with a Kerry family member, do you think it'd be a spoiler if they ran a running commentary on his accent?
Well, I guess so, yeah, because I will watch it and I'll say, oh, that's not a great Kerry accent. And then I'll just get on with it and take it for what the story is. But, I mean, it's not going to be as irritating as Julia Roberts was in Michael Collins, as her accent was, because that was very grating, her Irish accent.
Where would you rank that in the Irish accents by Hollywood stars' stakes?
Probably the second one, but I actually can't think of what the first one was. It was a film that came out in the last 3 or 4 years, and there was a woman who had an Irish accent in it, and it was just absolutely appalling. And I don't think an Irish accent can be difficult to do, because most actors are very musical, and it just, I don't know why they sometimes get it so badly wrong.
Do you like Pierce Brosnan? Is he? Would you be a fan?
I do. Right. I do, yeah.
Okay.
Not a fan of James Bond now at all, the James Bond movies.
And what about you believe in musical, the musicality maybe of somebody's ear affects their ability to do an accent?
I would think so. My brother and my sister are both very, very musical, and they can do any accent perfectly.
Right. And what about Pierce Brosnan singing? I mean, let's have a listen to Pierce Brosnan singing. Maybe this will come by some way of explanation as to the accuracy of the Kerry accent.
I hadn't thought about that.
Well, let's remind you of his singing. Here it goes.
Okay. Where are those happy days? They seem so hard to find. I tried to reach for you, but you have closed your mind.
Whatever happened to our love? Well, I wish I understood. Do you think Pierce is sending about a bit of an SOS with that?
Absolutely, yeah. Some singing lessons, please.
Okay, so
I don't mind the fact that as an actor he's not able to sing, but most singers and most people with a musical kind of ear can do accents.
Paul, would you be casting Pierce Brosnan in James Bond the musical?
Yeah, I'm sorry, my ears are still bleeding after that Mamma Mia bit there. I find the singing much less palatable than the attempts at an accent. That's not for me at all now. You know, massively successful film and very entertaining, but the singing, whew, no, I won't be buying the soundtrack.
Right. And in general, or just Pierce Brosnan's performance there? Have we triggered you somewhat?
To be fair, you've triggered me a little bit. I'm not a massive musical fan, but again, you know, totally subjective. That's a very entertaining film. A lot of people enjoy that. But Pierce Brosnan singing, definitely that's the bottom of the barrel for me. Sorry, Pierce, okay. I do love you, but not for the singing.
Margaret, now, you've what is it about Pierce? Like, you're relatively positive about Pierce Brosnan. You belong to the get over it, get over the nitty gritty detailed school of thought.
To the get over it.
You're giving him the benefit of the doubt.
Well, it's an interesting detail for a pub quiz or something, but you know, what accent was he actually trying to portray? But it wouldn't annoy me at all once I heard it once, unless it was absolutely appalling, you know, unless it was one of those really bad attempts to do any kind of Irish accent.
What about the Irish accent? That's no Irish accent, but it is the Hollywood Irish accent.
The Hollywood Irish accent, yeah. That really is irritating.
All right. Paul, do you ever find yourself abroad speaking to somebody from America, say, and that you begin to hear your own accent back and hear similarities to the Hollywood Irish accent?
No, I don't. But I'll tell you what. Sometimes if I'm not in Ireland and I want to say something, I might say it in Irish. And it happened to my sister and my mum quite frequently when my sister was living in Twickenham. And then she came back home to live in Ireland. And suddenly they realised, oh, wait a minute now, we can't make remarks about those people in Irish because they might understand what we're saying.
What about yourself, Paul? Ever had that experience where you begin to sound Hollywood Irish to yourself in your own ear when you're abroad or speaking to foreigners?
I haven't, but it could be down to my own lack of self-awareness. I'll have to pay attention to it a bit more.
What about Angela's Ashes was one that was set in Limerick. There was a couple of non-local actors in there. Did it grate on you at all? I don't think there was any particular accents that stuck out as howlers in that one. Paul, what about you? Limerick man there. Come in on that.
Yeah. Yeah, there were much stronger controversies about Angela's Ashes at the time, as far as I remember, rather than the accents. But the dispute about whether Frank McCourt's story was, in fact, you know, an accurate depiction, because people of Limerick felt, you know, very strongly about their city, and he was none too complimentary about it. So, as far as I remember, that was quite kind of the discussion at the time. Yeah, I don't remember. There were some great actors in that. It's been a long time since I've seen it, actually. I must go back and look at it. But yeah, it didn't particularly great. But again, I go back to it. Like, if actors and performances and directors and storytellers are making an effort, I think you'll forgive the sort of the pitfalls, you know, the fact that it's a little too musical or a little too diddly idle do, you know. But if you're just kind of sort of, you showed up on the day and you're just doing a ash or bigara, bigosh and bigoo, you know, that sort of nonsense really grates with Irish people. But if you're trying to tell a story and doing it honestly from a place of, you know, heartfelt meaning, I think people are more willing to go with that.
All right. It wasn't Emily Blunt, was it, Margaret, that you were thinking of?
Do you know, it might have been Emily Blunt, yeah.
In Wild Irish Time.
That's it, Wild Irish Time, yeah. And I was just thinking there, in the movie P.S. I Love You, which I saw on TV, there was an English actor, I think, who was playing the role of the Irish dead boyfriend, and his accent was dreadful too. And that kind of thing would get to me if it's way off kilter, way off key. It's kind of an irritating.
Right. Although Daisy Edgar-Jones in Normal People was widely complimented for a seamless Irish accent.
Yeah, she was absolutely amazing. Her ear was just perfect. And in fact, I was often disappointed that she didn't get as much kudos for her role in that as Paul did, both of whom were fantastic.
Okay. Well, look, we'll throw it out there again. Here's Pierce Brosnan and Helen Mirren in the new series Mobland. Let's see what people think, if this is indeed a Kerry accent.
Okay, thanks, Emil.
Shut the door. Where is he now? Yeah, hang about. Maeve, Harry's got Richie Stevens in the crosshairs. Mm. Stick or twist?
Stick Doom, or is that twist?
Of course twist is Doom. Hey, just out of interest, why?
It's obvious. Wrong place, wrong time.
Oh, all right.
How's that?
Pierce Brosnan, they're in Mobland, the new series. He plays an Irish gangster. And it should be said, you know, we're not drawing any conclusions about the quality of the drama itself. It's got a stellar cast: Tom Hardy, Pierce Brosnan, Helen Mirren. It's written by Ronan Bennett, who has The Jackal to his name, and people will remember Top Boy, which was ran for two series on Channel 4, a further two series on Netflix. So it's a stellar cast, but Pierce Brosnan's accent has raised a few eyebrows, and there have been people commenting about it online. Eugene Richardson, good afternoon to you.
Oh, good afternoon. How are you? No, I'm just having a great Western buff. You know, I'm watching Westerns, and I'm looking at Shiwari, Yellow Ribbon, and films like that, and A Fistful of Dynamite with
James Coburn.
Yeah, and the Irish accent they put on that, you know. But and as I said, Shiwari, Yellow Ribbon, you know, there are fellas there trying to be Irish and them actors, you know. Where I just think it's it doesn't really, you'll watch the movie anyway, won't you? You know, you might grind your teeth, but you'll watch it, you know.
And what have you heard of Mobland? Have you heard anything about it?
I've watched bits of it. Yeah, it's all right. He's all right, isn't he? You know, as acting wise. But when he opens his mouth, then there's a different tone now, you know.
Oh, you've watched full episodes of it, have you?
No. I only watched one or two bits of it, you know.
Right.
But as I said, like when he starts talking, like it, you know. And even with Helen Mirren in the other one, 1923, I watched her, and she's putting a good Irish accent in that. Well, that's a Western as well, you know. And there are break-offs in Yellowstone. I don't know. Well, anyway, Pierce should come home anyway. He should retire from acting, come home and be president. And stop all the moaning and groaning with politicians in the next couple of years, couple of months anyway.
It should be mentioned.
He'd walk into the bureaucracy into the party.
What accent should he campaign in?
Ah, he's on. He's an Aberman, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's a Navan man, isn't he?
Well, like, he born in Drogheda and then educated in Navan and then moved to the UK and then
He lived in Dublin for a while as well. Yeah, he lived in Dublin for a while. You know, I think he lived around Fisbury for a while.
Right, and we should give honourable mention to the other dubs involved in this series, Mobland, because Starburster by Fontaines DC is the opening theme to it as well. So it's
I didn't realise that. Now I didn't realise that. You know,
plenty of Irish input.
It's great.
Paul, Paul Alley on the other line. What do you think of the prospects of Pierce Brosnan taking a tilt at the Oris?
That is way beyond my purview. I mean, if Dana took a shot at it many years ago, why not? I guess he could. I'm sure he'd be a very eloquent president if he did come in, but no doubt. I really have no idea.
He might have 50% of the national vote nailed down already. If some of the online commentary and admirers are anything to go by. Eugene, you're a fan of the Westerns and not a fan of the accents in it. They died with their boots on. Miles Keogh, who introduces the tune of the Seventh Cavalry to Custer, is another Irish man in the Western.
Custer, another Irish man, yeah. I don't know who played him in that movie.
I have no idea. Errol Flynn played Custer. I don't know who played Miles Keogh.
I don't know who played Miles Keogh on that one. That was the Little Big Horn and all that.
Do you like to see an Irish person popping up in a Western, or do you kind of despair for it a bit, knowing what the accent, is going to go?
If they're all about in the Westerns, look, if they're on a horse and you're up and ride out, they're great, you know. That's it. Then they're a cowboy, you know.
Have you seen the Western set in Australia? It was written by the musician Nick Cave, The Proposition. There's plenty of Irish, genuine Irish accents in that.
I haven't. The only one I really seen from Australia was the Mountain Snowy River. That was brilliant. And Kurt Douglas played, he played an Irishman, I think it was, as well. And he played two parts in that. He played a brother. And he was a man with one leg on himself. And that was a brilliant movie. The Mountain Snowy River. Yeah, brilliant.
All right, Eugene, thanks for that. And Paul and Margaret as well. Thanks for calling in. We're back in a minute.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Maurice Leamy, how are you doing?
Hey, Colm, how are you?
Not too bad. You have a bit of a warning, a reminder. It's not set your clocks back or forward. It's something else you need to tell people.
It's something else I need to tell people, and it's all the landowners in the country. Make sure they go out with their holy water this evening and sprinkle it. And not only on the fields, but the entrance to the fields, apparently, it's very important. It's to keep all bad luck away, Colm. And, of course, that your land and your crops and the farm animals would be healthy and prosperous for the full year.
And how much holy water do you have to bring out? I mean, do you have to do the entire property, all the gates, the crops, the animals, the lot?
No, I say now, to be honest, if you just sprinkle at each gap entrance into the fields, and then, of course, you do the threshold, under the threshold into the house as well. And maybe if you have a really nice mare or something that you dread to lose, maybe throw some water in her, holy water in her as well, you know. But it's a tradition. It's a tradition. And I think...
Where did you get it from?
Well, I got it from my mum, because she was born in Cork but reared in Limerick, reared in a place called Bury, De Valera country. And she would, every year, she would make sure that every field was done. And I think it gives everyone a little bit of lift and a hope, you know, at the start of the summer, which it is 1st of May, be honest now, start of the summer. That's where when we need to get our crops and everything, you know, everything is growing, like, you know. And it's just funny, Colm, I went up to the local church this morning, because, of course, you have to use the Easter water, Easter blessed water, you know. And I went up to the church this morning, and there was about 8 or 10 bottles up there. But I suppose in another 5 minutes now, they'll be all gone.
Right. And what size? How long would it take when you say the gap? Is it the gateways, the thresholds and everything else? You're not talking about any gap in the hedge. You don't have to patrol the whole field.
The entrance gaps, you know. Just the entrance gaps, because the belief was years ago the bad luck would come in through the gap into the field, like in through the entrance gap, you know. So that would ward off all the pishogery and stuff, like, you know.
Do you have to say anything along with it? Is there a prayer or an incantation or something to...
I never even asked my mum what she would say, but I know ever since I started doing it anyway, I'd throw a bit of holy water and I'd just say, please God, let it be prosperous and healthy and no bad luck come into the place. That's all I'd say at any gap, like, you know. And of course, then if you had a good mare or something, you might throw it on her and say, let her breed a winner this year or something, you know.
Right.
It's all got to do with the power of belief, you know, Colm, and hoping that the year will go well for you, you know, because farming is a tough trade, Colm, and you can have bad years, tough years, you know, And it can be weather related or it can be for any other reason. You can have, let's say, with livestock, you could have TB outbreaks. You could have lots of things. There's so many diseases there now, of course. And also in crops with weather. We're so weather dependent in farming, you know.
Yeah, would you have to ring the fellow with the stallion and get him to make sure he'd sprinkle the stallion as well?
Them lads are so lucky to be no fear of them, you know. The stallion man always made money. The poor old man with the mare was always struggling. And so look, it's a tradition, Colm, and I hope it's a tradition that people will continue, because, you know, Ireland, I know we're becoming a multicultural country now, but I think our traditions and our cultures are so important, and I think we should never forget them. Like,
what about New Year's Eve? You know, we were talking to people yesterday. They said the first person who to cross the threshold in the new year, they were trying to avoid it being a redheaded person. Tommy Fleming was talking to us about it on the program yesterday. Do you have that one?
I never heard that.
Should be a dark-haired man crossing the threshold with fuel, bread,
woman?
And salt. They all said a dark-haired man.
Oh, okay.
Come across.
Not one I've come across, Colm. What part of the country are you from, Colm?
I'm from Kildare.
Okay. I thought you had an accent like you were from the west of Ireland or something, but maybe. You're speaking Irish or something. But anyhow, it's no. And is there traditions in Kildare like for, you know, May Eve and the Holy Water? Had you ever heard of it, Colm?
I hadn't heard it. There's a big tradition in Kildare. It's going to Punchestown, which is on at the moment, which half the county will descend on in well and bad fitting suits.
I'd say Willie Mullins must be out every morning with the holy water, throwing the holy water on all them horses, because he's so lucky lately. he must be going through about 6 bottles of holy water every week, you know.
And come here, it has to be Easter holy water, does it?
Apparently so, yeah. I mean, look, if you were stuck, you could use your water from last year. It's funny, I took up a little plastic, you know, them little bottles that come from Knock, I think. Our lures, they're little plastic ones, and of course I hadn't used it for so long. I took it up this morning, but luckily enough there was bottles there in the church, and of course when I was filling my bottle into the plastic lures bottle, there was a hole in it, so it all started leaking in the care.
Oh, right.
So I said my care is blessed anyway, whatever else about it, and what about the farm and stuff. I think you've got to leave it too.
Maybe drive the car in through every gate, it'll do the same job.
That'd be lazy, but I think you've got to leave it till the evening time to do it. I think, you know, to make sure it's done right, you have to do it in the evening. So I'm giving everyone a heads up, Colm.
Get it done before 12 o'clock.
Get it done before 12 o'clock, because a minute afterwards is no good.
All right. Okay. Thanks a million, Morris.
Good man, Colm. Thanks a million. Bye.
All right, Slán. Vinny, good afternoon to you.
Colm, how are you?
I'm not too bad. How long is Danny's hair?
Well, his mother probably says it's probably a bit too long. I'm getting longer by the day. Probably just down around, just above his ears, and he's a small little fringe. Like, he looks pretty good, I think, but of course, you know, you have to keep it neat and tidy as best you can, you know.
He do, yeah. Well, you sent us a picture. He's a lovely little fella. He has a fine head of hair on him. But what part of the country are you in?
We're in near Balladreen on the Mayo Roscommon border, not too far from the N17 there, yeah. North Roscommon.
And you're interested in getting him a trim.
Yeah, well, I've unfortunately nothing left to trim myself. I'm very light on top, but the little lad is. Danny is autistic. He's nearly 3. He'll be 3 this June, and like, he has a wonderful team with the CDNT who work with him, and his doctors, and a fantastic team around him. But the difficulty we're having is getting Danny's hair cut. Danny will suffer sensory overload. He's a good looking little lad, and he's a very, very clever little boy, but he just struggles when he goes to the barbers. And of course there's a rite of passage there, dads bringing their sons to the barbers and all that, but with Danny just the whole experience is a little bit too much for him, and we're looking to see, is there anybody out there who has experience or willing to train up in kind of autism and sensory awareness with autism and haircuts, you know. I think there's a lady called Amanda Masterson, Daydreamers in Walkinstown. She's opened up a place, but it's a little bit far.
Right, you're talking over 2 hours if you were to drive there, which is a bit far for a haircut.
It is a bit, yeah. Yeah.
And can you give us an insight, maybe for, you know, give us an insight into the level of distress potentially a haircut could cause, and that whole experience, just, you know, so people get an insight into why it is you need somebody who can cater to Danny's particular needs.
Yeah, I suppose with and I'm only learning about this, you know, with children with autism, but what I suppose, they tend to be like very intelligent, and alongside that, though, they tend to suffer with sensory overload. So, like, for instance, he doesn't like the sensation of the hair that's cut on his skin or his clothes, so that's the feeling or sensation of it, that causes distress. The sound or the noise of the clippers or anything that the barber's using, the sound of it would cause irritation. The noise of the hairdryer, because they're, you know, can be
very
quite loud,
yeah,
and start all of a sudden. The sound of running water, the smell from the dyes, the chemicals, the bright lights, and all of that occurs at the one time.
Right. And there's probably music in the barber shop as well, and people, you know, it's the itch, is it, of the cut hair and the feeling of the prickly kind of feeling that it gives when you're getting the haircut.
Yeah, he doesn't like. I suppose none of us really do, but it things tend to be more exaggerated in a sense. Say, for instance, if things fall down over his eyes, if water comes down over his eyes, there's a kind of a strong feeling of suffocation, and that causes complete. He comes quite overwhelmed with that. And of course, it's all happening at the same time. And as you say, there's a radio on. There might be somebody beside them on the phone, maybe laughing, talking. You know, with autistic children, and again, it's a constant learning curve, and it's a privilege, A, to be his father. He's a wonderful kid. Mm. And B, when you're with an autistic person or an autistic child, like, it's a fascinating world to see how they see. You know, it really is. And
yeah, what kind of stuff does he like? What's he into?
Oh, well, it's Postman Pat is like a religion in our house now. It's you know, he has all the toys, and like he's very precise in how he would play. Like, he would put things in a row, and he would put everything just as he would put a thing just as you want. He's a beautifully gentle little child. So if you went over, say, and you picked up, I don't know, Postman Pat's van, for example, and you moved it slightly, he'll just gently go back and put it back into place, kind of, as much as say, you know, that's the place for that.
Does he have a good bit of Postman Pat kit? He does.
Well, we're always on the lookout for more, certainly. But
right.
He does. He's the van, he's the train, he's, I don't know, whatever else. And like, he's all other bits and pieces. But Pat is the flavour of the month. And the minute he hears the music, you know, on the TV. Like,
is it still on the go, is it?
No, he's not. I think he retired a couple of years ago, but he's still going around our house, you know. So
right.
he makes the odd appearance, you know.
So is it hard to get the stuff?
Well, he gets stuff online, you know, and if the odd shop would have it, like, you know, and he's not a greedy child or anything like that. He has a few bits and pieces, but again, with autistic children, they wouldn't be very big into imaginative play, so he'd be very specific in how he plays with the toy. Like, he would put the correct toy into the correct place and all of that type of thing, whereas another child might, or he might put, say, little toy cars and things, and everything has to be flush and exact and precise and just so. Which for me is really, really fascinating. Like, he'd line up all his toys, say, along a table or one of his desks, and if you look through it, when he'd look through it one eye, and I was, what is he looking at? And if you actually looked from his vision, it's like a kaleidoscope of colours that he created using the little cars.
All right.
Like, it's absolutely mind blowing, the things that he comes up with and that they do, and of course he misses nothing. But the flip side of that again is this sensory overload and becoming overwhelmed at times.
Have you ever tried to bring him for a haircut?
Oh, we have, absolutely. To get him to the stage where he's at, I think took about 3 haircuts. And the barbers are brilliant and they're wonderful and they try their best and they have the little, you know, the race cars and things like that, or they might put on.
But this is the barber's seat that's in the shape of a race car, is it?
Yeah, sometimes, you know, barber, you'd see like a little toy car and they could hop into it and pretend they're racing or whatever, but that really wouldn't wash with Danny, because again, it's all the noise around him, and other people, or the door ringing, or the bell going, or the phone going, and all of these things at the same time. Like, if Danny's had a busy day, if he's been out, say, with family or cousins or whatever, he'll come back and he'll very much, an autistic child will want to have their own space.
Right. You've never had a, I mean, and I say this, I say this having seen a child whose hair was cut by his own father. But have you ever had an attempt at cutting it yourself?
No. I love him too much. I have very little to practice with, you know.
All right, fair enough. Okay, know your limits. Stay in your lane. Fair enough.
Yeah, you know, okay. Stay within your field of expertise. I suppose the difficulty is the kind of darker side to it is, you know, like if he becomes overwhelmed, like he'll cry, he'll lash out, he'll try to get out of the chair, causing possible injury to himself, you know, or in extreme cases, you'll sometimes see this with other autistic children or people, he'll hit himself, you know, they get so frustrated because he's unable to explain because he's nonverbal. We can't communicate to him what's actually happening.
Hold that thought, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, Vinnie, but Mark O'Keefe is on the other line. Mark, good afternoon to you.
Colin, good afternoon. How are you?
Thanks for calling in. You were listening to Vinnie there.
Vinnie, how are you? I was just listening to you on the radio. And,
how are you?
I can tell to call in because I have a son who's autistic. He's nonverbal. He's 12 this year. But I own a hairdressing group, and Riley's mum, Amy, regularly looks after autistic children who have the same challenges in a salon environment on their own on a Sunday. So you can come into the salon. There'll be no one else there. There'll be no music on. We can control the environment. You know, you and your wife can come in. It can be very personal. And she's doing that now for the last couple of years. And it's very helpful for people in our situation.
And what neck of the woods are you in, Mark?
One of the salons that she generally works out with in Ranelagh in Dublin.
Okay.
So I didn't catch where Vinnie is. Where else is he?
He's in Ballyhadreen in Roscommon.
Okay, a bit far. Yeah. But look, fancies coming up, he's more than welcome.
And how did you get into offering that service, Mark? Or how did your wife get into it? Did she begin with your own kid?
Yes, exactly. And then, of course, you just meet people in the same community, and you know, obviously, we have discussions with stars saying where he went to get out of the car.
You have a bit of company there, do you?
I do. He's trying to get out of the car.
All right. Okay.
Look, I'm happy they can leave my number there, and you can get in touch with any time you like.
Thank you.
You're very good. Thanks. Yeah, thanks for ringing in, Mark. Right. Best of luck. All right, Vinnie. That's Mark ringing in there. That's the kind of environment you're talking about, is it? Somewhere where you basically need the quiet salon.
Yeah, exactly. And I kind of like just supposed, you know, like. Understandably, if there's a barber cutting their hair, they're going to go through their process. They've done it 1,000 times. They may not be. Whereas Danny or possibly other autistic children, you just need to give them that extra bit of attention that if he's getting a bit overwhelmed, he starts stimming or, you know, because they will communicate in a non-verbal way. And you mightn't just be paying attention to it. Also, sometimes they put their hands up near their face or things like that. And that obviously is a difficulty if you've got scissors or clippers.
And what about other services, Vinnie? You know, the time will come where they'll be in for their first tooth checkup. Obviously, you know, he has baby teeth at the moment, but, you know, even still, dentists would advise that people get their teeth checked out at this stage. So is that something that's even on your radar yet?
We're going to get him dentures, you know, and solve that problem, you know.
I know you're kidding. But that's obviously a challenging environment too, is it?
Funny enough, no.
Really?
Loves the dentist. Okay. Loves the dentist. One of his favourite things to do in the world is brush his teeth.
Right.
He can only do it himself. He loves... Again, I think, though, it's the sound of the bristles on the teeth. I don't know. I'm guessing.
Right.
His mother and I are... Like he'd do it 10 times a day, given half a chance. So the brushing of the teeth is no problem. But there's other things like, say, with other kids, you know, normally, say, like brushing hair, showering is a big difficulty. You're near water. We got a new shower, the kind of rainfall one. We thought, you know, that would kind of...
It's just the noise of it, is it? Or the sensation, or both?
I think it's a bit of both. It's the noise, certainly, but the water coming over his face really kind of overwhelms him, and he can kind of lose his breath and things like that, you know. So the showering is one huge difficulty that we have to approach with kid loves, and then the haircut is. So they're the two biggest things. Now, I will say for him, like, he's like, we have two beautiful children, and we have a little girl called Ciela, and she's a ticket. She's brilliant. She's gorgeous.
Is she younger or older?
She's younger. She's 10 months this, God, 29th. When was that? Yesterday.
Well, you're probably not sleeping much, so forgive you not remembering that one. Go on.
Yeah, the mother's listening in now. She'd be saying you forgot the birthday. Danny is so independent, and he's like a mini adult. He's really, as a person, he's quite gentle. So, like, I think we should really feel prepared for a second child in a sense, because he's very, very independent. He does his own thing, knows what he wants. But he kind of lulled you into a false sense of security. We're so used to dealing with them, but we brought him into the barbers there, a local barbers, I won't say where it is, and they did their very, very best. But within 5 minutes, it became very, very apparent that not only could we not do it, we had to leave.
All right. The poor fella. That's very tough. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's hard on him because...
It sounds stressful if all his senses are becoming overwhelmed. I mean, is it very obvious that, you know, he's becoming distressed? Does he cry or sweat, or is that?
Yeah. Anybody in the vicinity near him or could see him would notice that this poor child is in a bad state of affairs. Whereas 9 times out of 10, all day long, he's chilled out. He's playing with his toys. He's out in the garden. He's, you know, but there's certain things, like certain foods. He's only eating certain foods. But then the flip side of that is, if his little kids love, like, juices or oranges or things like that, he wouldn't thank you for them. He would spit them out. All he likes is, he loves his favourite drink, water.
Right.
Drink water.
Jeez, his teeth are in great nick, so between brushing them 10 times a day and only drinking water.
Cole's going to be giving a call after
and
this.
And he doesn't mind the... Have you been into the dentist and sat up in the chair and had an examination?
Yeah, we've all his checkups and everything, and no problem. He sits in there, no problem, and he trusts. But I think it's not so much that it's the dentist or it's the barber. It's the noise and the sensations that accompany. So that's where, like, I've looked up this place in Dublin that I think it's Daydreamers, and I certainly don't speak on behalf of them, or I know very little about them, but they appear to be providing a really good service. And it's things like the whole process is slowed down, as that man kindly offered, and we'll be certainly taking him up his offer. There's sounds are really turned down. There's certain things that he can focus on, he might even be like the fabric of maybe say sandpaper, for example, or you know, sand or anything at all that he could just focus his brain on. The whole process is slowed down. There might have maybe a clippers that is quieter, things like that. I'm not an expert on it, but that's right. Why I'm kind of appealing to people. See, is there anyone out there who is an expert on hairdressing with autistic kids, and is there anybody who'd be willing to train or west of the Shannon? Because I can't find anyone west of the Shannon.
Anne Heffernan, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good, yeah. Where are you calling us from?
I'm calling from County Laois.
County Laois, right. You were listening to a lovely town. You were listening to Vinnie there.
I was.
It sounded familiar, didn't it?
Oh, very. Yeah, my grandson he still doesn't tolerate it much, but he's much better than he was. When he was younger, he could not tolerate a haircut. We took him to hairdressers. We brought hairdressers to the house. I would hold him on my knee. But they have such strength when they're frustrated like that.
Right.
Now, I'm talking about he was only 2-3 years of age at the time. But now my daughter cuts his hair because we can't take... We've done everything. We even took him to specialist hairdressers who done, you know, children with special needs.
Right.
But no good.
And had she had any training in cutting the hair, or did she just...
No, she was always pretty handy, but she would only use the scissors, nothing else.
And how did she keep him calm while she was cutting the hair? And, you know,
I would sit him on my knee and she would go around him. Now, sometimes, even now, she would cut his hair when he's asleep.
Really? Right.
Yeah, turn him from one side to the other in his sleep and cut his hair.
And he wouldn't wake up while that was going on, would he?
No, because it's only a scissors. You have no noise.
And the hair on the pillow wouldn't bother him when...
No. She would put a towel under his head and then take it out.
Right, so it sounds like a delicate operation.
Yeah, well, he's hardier now, and he's into ice cream now. Now, he is verbal. I know that man's son isn't. And if I, you know, and say to him, pay attention now, Zach, you get your hair cut and then he'll give you an ice cream. He loves ice cream.
Any particular type?
Well, nothing with bits in it.
Right.
Vanilla.
Okay, so just plain enough.
Honeycomb.
Right.
Yeah, plain enough. Yeah.
Oh, like in a bowl, not on a stick.
Oh, in a bowl. Or a cone. We would put ice cream in a cone, just buy the cones empty and put the ice cream in ourselves.
Right, and that's enough to get him over the line, is it?
It will get him now. Yeah, it wouldn't have had a few years ago. Nothing would do it. That was definitely all when he was asleep.
All right. Fiona but Duggan.
He's more tolerant.
Sorry, Anne.
More
yeah,
tolerant now.
Fiona Duggan, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. Hi, how are you?
This is your area, is it?
It is indeed. I'm actually a sensory mobile hairdresser and a specialist as well. I'm a qualified FNA. So I travel around Clare and Limerick in Munster area. And what I do is I travel to families' homes for children who have autistic or Down syndrome and so forth. What I feel is it's more rewarding in a family's home because I feel the child is more aware of all their surroundings around them and so forth. And, you know, I've got great feedback and so forth. I'm linked in with loads of, say, autistic groups in Limerick and so forth around Ireland and Down syndrome Ireland and Autism Ireland and so forth. So they've all recommended myself. So
how did you get into it, Fiona?
So I'm a qualified FNA anyway. And so forth. And I launched this into my business. I'm a mobile hairdresser. So I launched this into my business over a year ago, March 24. And I was actually cutting my client's son's hair. And he has sensory issues regarding getting his hair cut and so forth. And then I just decided to actually, because I just felt there was such a need to bring this into the family home, because I just feel it's so rewarding. As I say, the child then is more kind of relaxed when their family is there and they're all relaxed around their own surrounding in the family home. And I kind of bring a holistic experience as well.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, do you have a kind of a kit bag with you that you bring to kind of create an atmosphere, or do you have sensory toys with you? What way does it work?
Right. Yeah, sure. So I suppose really what I do really is I assess the situation when I go into the family's home and so forth. And what I do really is there is, so like a sensory haircut to me is very special in its own way, because this haircut could take an hour, it could take a half an hour, it depends on the child's needs really. Because every family's needs are very different to everyone else's. So I just kind of like, I don't bring any sensory toys or anything like that. I sometimes use my clippers if needed. I have a silent one, or I just use my scissors. But right, I suppose really, do you know?
Yeah, silent clippers. It just doesn't make too much noise, too much vibration.
It doesn't make the noise. I can do that as well. But actually, some of the families that have requested not for me to use it, they don't like it, whatever. So they don't like the feel of the sensation, even though it's on silent. You know, it takes down the tone, it's reduced the tone and so forth. So it's the odd time I would use that, but normally I would just use my scissors. And what I would do is, like, I have lovely little child-friendly gowns as well. Either they like it on or they don't. There's no problem at all. But what I find works is if when they're sitting on the family, on the parents' lap, and, you know, they could be looking at their, whatever, some telly or something like that, if they're distracted, or I would just talk calmly to them. And after a while, it takes for them, like, coming into somebody's family home, you know yourself, it's very strange for a young child. You know, they're going to get daunted. They're going to kind of go, who's this new person coming into my house? So I kind of just kind of assess the situation. I just kind of just very calmly with the child. And if the child would like the haircut, fine. Sometimes this mightn't always work out. I've noticed that as a child gets too overwhelmed, is extremely upset, I just give maybe half an hour and I say to the parents, look, you know, it's not fair anymore. I said, if I come back another time, your child might get used to me when they see me on a regular basis, you know. So that has happened, and the cut came out perfect the next day, like, you know, and whatever, and the child and so forth, and it was fine. But I suppose, really, you know, at the end of the day, I just feel it's more relaxed atmosphere in the family home. I've actually proven to myself it's been a huge success.
And it's not easy going into somebody else's home, you know, for yourself and you're meeting other people. So, you know, how do you kind of manage your own anxiety and communicate calm to the child?
Yeah, sure. I suppose I just kind of, you know, talk to the child as well. I just, I suppose I'm in a more calming kind of atmosphere and so forth. And I just get to know the child. I just kind of, well, the parent will tell me, obviously, before in the message when they text me and so forth, what, I always say to the parent, what sensory needs have your child? What do they like? What don't they like? And so forth. And I kind of go from there then. And I suppose being a qualified SNA, then I know all the kind of, like, I think when you have that as well, it's huge because it makes the parent more relaxed because they know what I'm dealing with, you know, when I help the parent then kind of make the cuts then very regular when I call and so forth.
And on the practical...
And get used to me after a while, you know.
On the sensory level, if you want, so obviously you can minimise the noise and you've got your silent clippers, but what Vinnie was talking about there, about the sensation of cut hair going down the neck and on the face, are there any ways around that?
There is, there is a few different ways, I suppose, really. You know, there's different ways you can do that and so forth, and just kind of, I suppose, you know, when you're talking to the child and, like, you know, I could always stop halfway through a cut if it was too much for a child, and then I go back to it again after a few minutes. I always assess the child to make sure how they're feeling during the cut and so forth and all that. And,
does it affect the kind of haircut that you give, you know, so, like... I presume in some cases you have to be able to give a quick but presentable haircut. You know, have you got skilled up on sort of the 5-minute haircut, the 10-minute haircut, so that every time you stop, you could kind of leave them as they are?
No, I wouldn't let them go out now or anything like that. As my clients know and families know, I'm a bit of a perfectionist. I like the style to be just perfect. You know, and if the child is moving very quick and so forth, I just kind of work around a different section of the hair. And then when they're more relaxed, I kind of take my time in between the cut. As I say, the cut could take a half an hour. It could take an hour. I always leave a good hour with the family because, as I say, every family needs are different. So I kind of just, you know, I kind of distract them. I chat away. We talk about, like, for example, you know, they're looking at their iPad and they're looking at some cartoon. I kind of, oh, look at this or whatever. And they get kind of mesmerized into it, you know, and it's great. Right. And I can interact with them like that as well, and I just proceed then with the cutting and whatever, you know.
All right, fair play to you. We'll have more on this in a minute. Yeah. Thanks a million. Thanks, Fiona.
Afternoon, Colin. How are you?
You were listening to Vinnie there. You've got plenty in common there. You have a young lad who likes the dentist, which is a rare enough occurrence. But what about the haircut?
Oh, the haircut is just an absolute no-go. We've struggled for years and years and I'm trying to get his haircut. We've attempted numerous times, but it's just caused more hassle than it's worth for him, and it's almost traumatising from to a certain extent, you know.
Right, and no sensory barber or anything in your area that you know of, is there?
Or not in my local area.
Right.
In fairness, he was having a really, really good day. During his Easter holidays, I brought him something, and he was just having a really good day. So I said, well, he's in good form now, we'll talk to him and try to get him a haircut. And I brought him to my own local barber. He lives a couple of doors down from me. He's a Brazilian guy. He was really, really good and really patient. We had tried with him a few times before, but he hadn't even gotten close to him. So eventually we just kept trying and trying. And we eventually did get there on the day, but it was very, very hard.
Was it tough on him?
Oh, my God, it was really, really tough. And I think it's just... As they were saying earlier on, is the sensation of the hair being cut and falling down in his face and going onto his hands and into his mouth and stuff, that's just absolutely driving him berserk, you know.
Yeah.
So the more it was going on his tongue, he was trying to clean it out, but he was actually just shoving more hair into his mouth with his hands. But
that's terrible.
It's hard, but it's worth it in the long run when we did get it done because twice as gorgeous.
Twice
as gorgeous now as he was going in the door, you know. So
what did he go for?
Just a little trim, but little trim was a lot coming off it because he had so much hair at the time.
You weren't going to risk a mullet.
No, not yet. No, we couldn't even attempt the clippers because of the buzzing noise and everything. So I was literally just the scissors. But my wife has been attempting it for years, and she's done a really, really good job of it, as good as we can get it, leading up to it.
Right, but on the dental road, he doesn't mind going to the dentist. But I mean, a bigger procedure is a bit of another issue for you.
Yeah, because my wife figured out that he had a bit of a broken tooth, so he had been asking to go to the dentist, which we thought was a bit unusual. So we booked an appointment, and he's never had to get any work done before. He's gone for a checkup, and he loved the checkup. He enjoyed the dentist kind of poking around his mouth and just having a look. But like I said, he never got any work done as such. But he has to get a tooth pulled. And unfortunately, they have to put him under general anaesthetic, and there's a year of a witness for it to be done.
A year to get a broken tooth pulled?
Yeah, just because he has to go under anaesthetic, you see.
Right. And is it pain in him?
It can give him pain every now and again. So he's on antibiotic for it at the moment, but it's just a matter of playing the waiting game for to get the call up for it, or it'll go private, which we can't really do right now.
Right. That's an awful. It's an awful long wait, isn't it?
Yeah, it's typical services for autistic kids. You know, there's just nothing out there for them really.
Right, Vinny, you've been through the dentist before, but you haven't had any teeth pulled like this, have you? For Danny?
No. But as the man says, it's all ahead of us. It was the biggest difficulty we have, and I supervised with that man, and for his child, the biggest, I suppose, difficulty and worry we have as parents with Danny is if he becomes overwhelmed, you know, he becomes like red in the face, agitated, he'll hit himself. If that continues on into the night, like, the least he worries is that he won't have sleep. But if, God forbid, if you weren't there, he can actually potentially injure himself.
All right.
You know, so it's a kind of a vicious circle. What starts off as something seemingly innocent, well, he doesn't like it, big deal, sure, we'll come back another day. It wouldn't happen all the time, but it does hold that potential, and that's a worry. So you have to, like, happily enough, but you have to sit awake and you have to watch him, keep a good eye on him. Like, we have the monitors and all that business, and you'd sometimes sit in with them. But for him, I've been with Danny and his mother too at 2 in the morning, and he is completely overwhelmed. You know, and it could be something so small that started it off. And I suppose that's what I didn't understand myself until I became a father of an autistic child. I'm sure other parents would understand this. Mm. It can develop into a kind of a dangerous situation in extreme cases, you know. But no, thankfully, so far, the dentist hasn't proven to be that difficult. But it's a worry. And I would hope that... Thanks to those two people who rang in, and certainly be chasing them
right. up. And we've somebody else on the line here. Karen Clinch, good afternoon to you. Hi, Karen, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, great. How are you? You're in Swinford.
I'm in Swinford.
Yeah, and you have a barber shop, do you?
I have a barber shop. It's the Harry Books Barbers.
Right.
Main Street, Swinford, and I offer sensory appointments.
All right, okay. And brilliant. You, how did you get into that, Karen? How did you realise that,
I did one 6 years ago, and I just opened a barbershop about 6 years ago, and someone asked me to do a sensory appointment, and I have loads of kids coming to me from everywhere. It's just patients and routine, I think.
Right. And do you have to, do you do it on a particular day? Do you set up the shop
I do it every day, but I give them an appointment. So the first time they come in, I do it for an hour. If it took an hour, we'd take our time.
Right.
If I can get the haircut done the first day, they might have to come back a couple of times.
Okay.
And you're about
Swinford, half an hour from Balladreen, is it?
Yeah, 30 minutes from Balladreen.
Okay.
She's not too far yet.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. Well,
and if they wanted to come in and meet me, and we could sit down, mightn't have to do the haircut the first day.
Is the name yourself, Karen? Is it the Hairy Books or the Hardy Books? I didn't hear you.
The Hairy Books.
I thought it was the Hardy Books, like the TV show.
Well, a related name. The Karen's line is bad there, but Bert, you're a barber as well.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Yes, I am, yeah. I've been a barber. I've only ever been a barber. And I think it comes down to the sensory thing, I think, is a big thing. No televisions, no radios, nothing that can distract. And then the other thing is, I think the barber... has to be very, very, have a very calm attitude. And also sometimes I know with kids with problems that they go through, they can feel the anxiety coming through their parents. And it's not a blame game. It's just the parents understand it's going to be very hard to get this thing done. And it just passes through the kids, because they're so sensory perceptive, can feel it coming off their parents.
Right. How do you calm customers' parents down then, Bert?
They just come in and I might take a haircut or two maybe to get the full haircut done, but in a sense it's all sensory. Some kids don't like to be touched, and you have to get through the touch thing, and then it's a question of just gradually getting them used to it. So it's just how can I put this politely? It's a sensory perception thing that you have to you kind of have to walk. Everybody has to be calm.
Right. That's do you remember the first time you had to do it?
I do. It was quite difficult because the young lad at the time did not want to get his hair cut, so we ended up that we had to stand at the door and cut his hair looking out at the buses.
Right.
It was just distraction, but it was his distraction as opposed to what he wanted to look at, as opposed to what you wanted him to do, if you understand that way of getting around things.
He stood on the threshold and just watched the buses, which were his thing, and you cut the hair in the doorway.
Yes.
Now, how long ago was that, Bert?
Again, I'm here since 1988, so it was a couple of years before that, so it's a long, long time ago. But again, that's a scissors walk, and then you have to then go, and if they can accept the machine, then you have to bring the machine in, and that in itself is another progression. But right. it's a slow progression thing.
Could I ask you a question, Colm? Is that okay?
For sure, yeah, fire away.
I don't have to put anyone on the spot, but no. I'm just genuinely interested in how would including this gentleman and other people, deal with a non-verbal child, because, you know, verbal communication, it's not going to work. You know, like, I could say Danny and he won't respond to his name, let alone an instruction. So, like the odd time by chance, he might respond to Danny, whether it's just the noise he's responded to or whether he knows he's dead or not, it's still up for debate. But he does not respond to verbal communication pretty much at all. So, like, I just curious and interested in what happens there, you know, when he's non-verbal.
Bert, do you want to deal with that quickly?
Non-verbal has nothing got to, please don't take this as anything, but non-verbal to me is nothing got to do with the actual haircut, if you understand that way of thinking. Because I'm here just to cut his hair. And a verbal response is nothing basically got to do with the haircut, if you kind of think about it.
Right. Okay, listen, we're going to have to take a quick break. We're back in a second. Hello, Mungoin here. Vinny, you were listening to Bert there talking about how he cuts her. Any help there today? Are you sort of, have you any ideas as to where you're going to progress from here? You'll be taking the road to Swinford, maybe? Hello, Vinny. Hiya, Vinny, how are you?
Hello, can you hear me? Hello?
I can indeed, yeah. So,
Gremlin's on the line. Yeah, definitely, and thanks for having called in. Definitely the woman in Swinford, without a doubt, and perhaps the gentleman in Dublin as well, in Ranelagh, and sometimes he might go visit relatives or cousins. It's good to see that there's an awareness of it, and not to seem ungrateful, but I suppose maybe other people who are listening, who have businesses, you know, might consider, but you know, maybe there's an angle that we could actually explore.
For sure.
If not only from the community perspective, from a financial perspective, because there's a lot of autistic kids, and a small bit of training, a small bit of investment might go a long way to benefit them financially and the community, you know.
All right. No doubt something we'll come back to, but thanks for calling in, Vinny. Thanks for raising that, and thanks to everyone who responded.